And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 354. It's a Bloom Board Tuesday. Talked pitchers last week. We're talking hitters this week, some risers and fallers like we love to do. Talk a little news and much, much more. But before we get to that, you can follow me on Twitter at BDEntrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ, Ryan Bloomfield. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well. Happy to report, happy to follow up. A few people were asking, happy to report that the Nerf Blaster party went about as well as could be expected on Saturday. So oldest had a good time there. Probably out of the 20 kids, maybe 12 of them were crying because rivalries were being formed. It was kind of Lord of the Flies out there. Didn't expect that level to creep up, but survived that very well. And then outside of that, doing pretty good. Just watching the Vegas game with you tonight.
It's electric. I was up to 11:15 or so watching the whole thing. I just couldn't take my eyes off it. It sounds like a car crash. You just got to watch it. And it's still going. Like Ryan sits down and goes, "Oh, so it's, you know, might not hit the over under tonight. It's crazy." Well, Ryan's the sixth inning. We got plenty of time. And then boom, Geloff goes deep, and we have the over, and we still have more to come. So it's just nuts watching some of these balls. Some of them are crushed. I'm not going to deny it. Some of them might not be as crushed in another ballpark. There's levels to this, but we looked at the weather last Thursday night when we told everybody that they were in Vegas for a week. And we were looking before the show, just you and I, and Sunday, because every game's coming up is an evening game except Sunday at 12:05 p.m. Pacific time, 110 degrees. Whew. It's going to be awesome. So set your DVR, whatever you kids use these days, and enjoy.
Set your DVR.
Yeah, I don't need to have a DVR. I have YouTube TV. They just record everything for me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Do you like the Vegas series? See, I kind of like quirky stuff like this for a while.
I don't like it.
Maybe this is a two off, but
it's a six off is the problem.
It's a six off. Technically, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the problem. It's like Mexico City is only two games. You can kind of like roll with that. It's six games. And this is from like real life. You're talking A's, Rockies, Brewers. It could have an impact, but A's, Rockies, who cares? Like for real life. Fantasy, this could have a tremendous, like, Kyle Harrison just got shelled, and, like, that doesn't happen. Like, he gave up 7 runs. He gave up 9 all of May. There was a stat coming out that the Brewers allowed 12 home runs in May. They allowed 11 in a game and a half. Now 12 since Geloff's home run, 12. So, it's just – it's for the fantasy aspect of things, yeah, it's great if you have hitters, but if you have pitchers and, well, if you're crazy enough to play them, that's on you. But it tilts the fantasy game a lot for six games. Like it could have a major impact. If, say, one of these guys plays all six games, they could go bonkers.
Yeah. And definitely, I mean, anyone who has Kyle Harrison, I mean, Kyle Harrison was universally started in NFBC main event.
He's a two-step. You're going to start him. You're going to start him playing no matter what.
That's right. It is a two-step. So I guess there probably aren't many regrets, although, of course, no one thought he'd give up 8 earned runs. But, that definitely hurts. Someone benched Kyle Harrison in an OC. Either that or
they're not
has been attention. On the bench for a while. Yeah. 98% started in 12-teamers. 100% in 15-teamers. But, No, I hear you. It does I don't know. I like weird stuff.
It's fun to watch, but it feels like an exhibition. It doesn't feel like watching real baseball.
It is. I mean,
but it's not, is the problem.
Yeah. I mean, they're doing it to promote Vegas and the team and all that. But
but the scary part is, like, they've already talked about it. If the stadium's not ready, like, is it next year or the year after 2028 maybe? This is where they're playing. Like, Sacramento's, like, deals off after, like, it's either this year or the next year. They got one more year maybe in Sacramento. Then they're going to Vegas no matter what, unless a new deal somehow struck. And this is where they'll be playing if that stadium's not ready. So buckle up.
Yeah, I'm here for it, man. I actually think, to your point earlier about like a lot of these teams that are playing in the two series, like the Rockies, A's, whatever. In honor of, like, you know, it's World Cup's coming, in honor of soccer relegation, I think just put the four worst teams in a group together in baseball for September, throw them in Vegas, just have them play each other to see what happens.
Now, I'd be down for that, like in the postseason while the big boys are playing. If you put like the bottom four here, yes, all for that. Like do a whole kind of like WBC style where it's pod play, runs determine tiebreakers, and if you are the worst in the whole thing, yeah, let's dance. Like we could, I'm cool with something like that. That'd be entertaining. Or can you imagine if they had like a college tournament here with metal bats? That's something, because it's a tournament, a selected thing, I'm in. But putting this in the middle of the season, like put the All-Star game here, give me a home run derby. I'm like, get me Yordan Alvarez in this thing. Let's go see where those balls go. Maybe Vlad could hit a couple home runs here. So yeah, that kind of stuff. But yeah, so you're gonna get me going here pretty soon. That's what you're trying to do, I can tell. But
it's really what I'm trying to do.
I enjoy watching it. Like I was just enamored by it last night. Like King William hit a home run from his ass. It was crushed. So it's just impressive to watch, but absolutely chaotic and childish at the same time. So, yes. All right. With that being said, let's talk some news and notes here. And for those that have Ronald Acuña, he's heard again. You've heard that before. We'll see how that goes. But let's start with Chris Bassitt. He heads to the IL with a back injury. Trey Gibson was called up on Monday, got the spot started, so I can stick in the rotation for now, as far as we are aware. Chris Bassitt, it's an interesting one because we don't know like the level to the back injury, but he's getting a second opinion because they want him to get a shot in his back. He's getting a second opinion to find out if there's other options to help his back. So that tells me this isn't your typical just like back spasm right now, which is extra weird considering he threw a bullpen over the weekend and they thought he'd be ready to go for Monday's two-step. So there's a lot of unanswered questions with this one right now.
And he was at the Luke Combs concert a few days ago. Did you see that?
That whole crew was there, whole Toronto crew with
one
Chris
of us.
Bassitt. Yes.
Yeah.
They
Osman, Scherzer, Bassitt. I was going to say, as long as they didn't tumble out of there like Bubba did, but maybe that's, you know, maybe
that's how he hurt his back. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, pretty brutal stuff, especially, I mean, you tack on the age and you just don't know. Like, I don't know. I feel like at any time this could be like the end for Chris Bassitt. So it's rough. Hope you enjoy the concert. I think we've been down the path of Orioles six starters before, and it's, I guess we could maybe talk about them on Thursday, but I'm not too interested at all in Trey Gibson or Brandon Young for that matter.
Trey Gibson's got at least skills. I'm not like interested in him right now, but a guy to keep an eye on if he gets a longer run. But the biggest thing is Cade Povich is starting to ramp up, still a few weeks away, and that would get my interest if Cade Povich is getting closer. It's still a streamer thing, but he's got skills that we've actually seen produce at the big league level. So that would get me intrigued. A couple prospects got called up on Tuesday. That'll make Fab interesting on Sunday. First off, Braden Montgomery of the Chicago White Sox. Like I mentioned in our Discord, hat tip to the White Sox, man. They're actually like going for it. They're calling all their young guys up. They're not like scared. You know, they can only get one draft pick with Murakami probably is the guy to get it, but they did it last year with Bydroth and Montgomery, Colson, and now they're doing it with Braden and they brought up Fernandez and all these other guys. They're bringing up players, which is good to see. At AAA this season, AA and AAA combined, 56 games for Montgomery, hit .314, 10 home runs, 5 steals. He is 23 years old, and I think a lot of people were kind of didn't think he'd get called up this year. So this is a big one, and he had a walk-off in his debut. So what are your thoughts on Braden Montgomery?
Yeah, that was a pretty cool moment. Opposite field walk-off as well. And there is research out there, older research, but like if you can hit opposite field home runs, I mean, this shouldn't come as a surprise. Like your raw power is actually pretty damn good. So that was an impressive moment for Braden Montgomery. Also a very cool moment to walk it off in your debut. 10% barrel rate for Braden Montgomery in his first go around at AAA, 132 plate appearances there with really good exit velos and whatnot. So the power looks really good for Braden Montgomery. And then of course, the other thing we want to look at with these prospects is what's the playing time outlook look like? And I mean, I think, especially if he hits, Braden Montgomery, he's got plenty of runway. Started right field Tuesday night. I don't see anyone on the current roster that should even split time with Braden Montgomery, who is a switch hitter. And to your point, and to the Red Sox, or the Red Sox, to the White Sox credit, they're not playing games with these guys. They're going to play them and see what they have. So maybe in a couple of weeks, Everson Pereira works his way into the situation. But I think Braden Montgomery's got some decent runway. Power looks really good. And again, the more that he does in the big league level his first week, it gives more staying power. It also, of course, ups the FAB price. So do with that what you will.
Yeah, I think it's his job to lose right now. Pereira is going to get a job. I think it might come in, even if it's platooning with Benintendi. I know you love Benintendi. You mention him all the time, but if we get real about it, well, okay,
I wouldn't say love.
Every FAB show when they have at least
I do four mention righties, him every week.
You mention him every week, so it's your guy.
So that qualifies as love. I guess that's fair.
That's yeah. So like he seems like he'd be the odd man. Like, he's even the DH right now. So. Because Peters has earned his spot. We talked about him on the FAB show last week, and he continues to produce after the banana ball legend, Tristan Peters. Yeah. There's a lot to like with this team. It's really intriguing, and I hope they keep Montgomery up there. But when Pereira comes back, I think he's earned the chance to at least get some action as well, because this power seemed rather legit at the time before he got hurt. So time will tell, but yeah, Braden Montgomery, really interesting call-up on Tuesday. Another one, the Colorado Rockies, Cole Carrig. He's from some of the people, they said he's the sixth-ranked prospect in the Rocky system. Depends on where you look. Some say seventh, ninth, top 10 prospects. All you got to worry about here. And all you really need to worry about with Cole Carrig is, boy, he can run. In 57 games at AAA this year, he's hitting .338, six home runs. That's nice. He had 15 doubles, five triples, so 26 extra base hits, 30 stolen bases, and he got caught stealing seven times. Like, the boy just ran. First career hit on Tuesday evening, triple down the right field line, and he flew around the bases. So this is another situation, like you mentioned, with the White Sox. Rockies called him up. You know, Doyle's hurt. Beck's hurt. Like, they're running out of options. I don't think Carrig was a part of their plan this early in the season, but he's in center field, and I don't see anything taking his time anytime soon.
Yeah, I guess insert Rockies joke here.
Oh, Rockies, like, Rockies. Yes. Gotcha.
That is a thing. Like, we could have said that about Zach Veen. We could have said that about, I'm drawing other blanks, even Jake McCarthy at some point. But a lot of their prospects, like, it's just some interesting decisions with the Rockies. I do agree with you. Like, the current roster as constructed, like Sterling Thompson, I would hope not. I know, like, is Doyle's hurt, so he's not even.
So he said Doyle and Beck are on the IL.
Yeah, that's right. Doyle and Beck. Still. Yeah. Beck was, of course, the other prospect that just kind of gets jerked around when he's up, and so I don't know. Right now, there doesn't seem to be too much competition for Cole Carrig. The K rate, the plate skills in AAA looked really good. 15% K, 10% swinging strike. Those are all pretty good numbers. Good plate patience. Let's see if the Rockies run Carrig, see where he hits in the order. Tonight was what, seventh. Which, good. I get it. Don't want to call him up and lead off, but I think the key to the value will be Cole Carrig. How green is that light? Also gets the benefit of having his first, what, five games be at Coors and in Vegas. So
yeah,
good that may also affect off. The FAB price exactly this mm-hmm. weekend. So I don't know, like, maybe factor that in as well if Cole Carey goes nuts, but exciting prospect. Exciting yeah. guy.
Lots of speed. We talk about it and even draft season early on in FAB that saves and steals are stuff you can find throughout the season. If Carrick does stick, like, this is a steals machine. This is a game changing type yep. guy. But to Ryan's point, like, Rockies could Rocky this up in 2 seconds and make everyone spends money because he plays every game this week. You spend over $100 and then he plays twice next week. That's something they can do, and we would not be shocked, yeah. unfortunately.
Again, it doesn't look like that would happen.
No, it shouldn't.
Every other time. So, like, just yeah. throwing that out there.
Exactly. And the last one, at least, just something to keep an eye on, and we'll know more on Thursday night. But Kodai Senga, there was a chance he was going to join the rotation this week. They decided, hey, he needs another rehab start to prove that he can actually get outs. Well, that's not happening either, because he got pulled off his rehab start with an ulnar nerve irritation. He's going to go see a specialist. That's not great, Bob, is the best way I can put that. So the question now becomes, and again, that's why we'll know more on Thursday evening, but just keep in mind for all you Jonah Tong fans, he could be back. He wasn't great, but he could be back. David Peterson could get back. Like, the Mets are running out of options right now.
And Sean Manaea is just a little bit more buffered from being booted from the rotation. He's pitched, I don't know, half decently, at least for some of my squads. I do think we have a Meister/reattach on line one situation here with Kode Senga. It does not look good, unfortunately.
It does not look good. It was interesting. Speaking of Dr. Keith Meister, he was visited by Connor Griffin yesterday. So
that's right.
And got a positive report for once. So we'll see how Connor starts ramping up his throwing progression starting on Wednesday. All right, Ryan, that wraps up our news and notes. You got to kind of tame because we'll get most of the goodies on Thursday night when we know more about guys rehabbing and coming back. Like Francisco Alvarez came back on Tuesday. He's already back in our life. Like, there's a bunch of
weeks early. Weeks early. Guy's a gamer just to get injured again. But
he was out for 4 weeks instead of 6 to 8. So that's pretty impressive. But let's talk Bloom Boards. It's a Tuesday night. Let's get to some risers and fallers.
All right. So this one comes to us from a suggestion from a listener. Bubba, do you want to say who that is?
Our good buddy, Canton Dog.
Appreciate the idea, Greg. And really, anyone in the Discord, anyone who listens to the show, if you have ideas for Bloom Boards, we run of these every single Tuesday, and there are a finite amount of boards that I have in the queue. So any suggestions, anything you'd want to see, let me know. Get in touch. This is a really good concept. We've done something similar in the past, but the concept here, we're looking at outliers for BABIP, batting average on balls in play. So when you put a ball in play, how often does it fall in for a hit? And also homer to fly ball rate. So if you hit a fly ball, what percentage of your fly balls leave the yard? Typically, a hitter establishes their own baseline for each of those two metrics, BABIP, and again, that's heavily correlated to batting average, and homer to fly. Each hitter establishes their own baseline. League average BABIP's around 290 to 300, just to give you guys some context. League average homer to fly, God, it changes so much every year. I want to say 11-12%. Something like that. Those are MLB averages, but again, each hitter has their own baseline. So what this board is looking at is the top and bottom 15 outliers of each hitter's personal BABIP and homer to fly ball rate from the last three seasons, from 2023 through 2025, comparing that to what they're currently doing this season in 2026. And so we're kind of trying to isolate the guys who are way overperforming their personal baseline. For those of you watching on YouTube, those are the folks in Oregon Duck Green on the left side of the Bloom Board. And then the players who are underperforming compared to their personal baseline from the last three seasons are in red and are on the right side of the board. You can kind of take the color coding here two different ways. Like the green, yes, they're overperforming. We'll see once we kind of dive into a bunch of these guys. Typically, if you're overperforming, the expectation is you will regress back to, what your baseline is over the past few seasons. So obviously not always the case, but in the aggregate at the macro level, that's typically what happens. But that's the general theme, the general description of what we are looking at and the subject of the show this evening.
Yep. So we're looking at positive and negative regression more likely than not, as Ryan said, but to what is the question? And some might not. That's the beauty of the whole thing. But this will open Pandora's box to let us talk about a few guys. And we'll kick it off with O'Neill Cruz, who 23 to 25 had a 308 BABIP, which would check out for a guy that hit 233, 250, 259, or 200 last year to top it off. This year, we're seeing a BABIP of 377 to go with his 264 batting average. So still a wide gap there, but 17% homer to fly over the previous three seasons, 28% this year. So when you see a spike like that, I always want to know, like, hey, what's the fly ball situation? It's actually down 5%, which is interesting. But I won't say every statistic. I'll let Ryan have some fun here. But O'Neill Cruz, I'll say this much, is always a guy that we know hits the snot out of the baseball. It's a combination of actually making contact and staying healthy. And right now we're seeing a little bit of both, given he's day-to-day right now with lingering injuries. But what's your thoughts on this O'Neill Cruz spike this season?
Yeah, it's wild to see. So not many hitters hold a high 20% homer to fly. So like, sure, O'Neill Cruz probably isn't going to hold this level of home run prowess. But to your point, Bubba, I mean, he does hit the hell out of the ball. Most of the time it's on the ground. But this season, O'Neill Cruz has converted more of those fly balls for home runs. And I think, honestly, I've always kind of thought O'Neill Cruz's 17% homer to fly, while still above average, is kind of underperforming given how hard he hits the ball. And so I'm more leaning towards the 2026 version. Now, the BABIP, like the 264 batting average that O'Neill Cruz is currently sporting, not sure that holds. But again, you hit the ball this hard, you hit this ball on the ground that often, you're going to typically have an above average BABIP. So I'm leaning actually for both batting average and homers. I'm leaning more towards the 2026 version of O'Neill Cruz, who's still just 27 years old, and current injury concern aside, he's not going to keep up this level, but I think he can be pretty close.
Well, like the other like big things with Cruz, which is just weird, is you kind of like looking for outliers with this, and outside of like the massive BABIP and homer to fly ball, like we were talking, it's the same strikeout rates, just the same walk rates. Like he's just converting things differently. So that's where I get confused. Like, will it linger? Is the question, because there's really nothing that stands out as a massive gains difference, I guess, for him. But yeah, I still think, like you said, if he's hitting the ball this hard, this consistently, and keeping it in play, that we've always thought he could be pretty darn good. It's just a matter of could he figure it out between the years, and maybe he's doing that right now.
Also, pretty wildly hitting .312 against lefties.
That's the big improvement, I think. That's what I was looking for. I know there's a split situation going on there.
Yeah.
So that'll help a ton as well. All right, Jordan Walker, a player that people have wanted to get going for years, not to mention he's 24 this year, which is insane to think about. But over the first three seasons, age 21 to 23, Jordan Walker had a .310 BABIP this year, .363. And that is followed up with a .303 batting average, which is outstanding after being .215 and .201 the last two seasons. Just dreadful stuff from Jordan Walker. His home run to fly ball have gone from 11% to 23%. And this is another one of those guys that we knew hit the ball on the ground a ton in the past. That has improved a decent amount this year, Ryan. So what's your thoughts on Jordan Walker? Because this is one of those where it's like it took a few years, but we might be finding the real deal.
Yeah, and this is one of the all-time Bubba truisms is, right, like Jordan Walker, like you said, 24 years old, this baseline that we're looking at is age 21 through 23 ball player. So like I think someone, especially of Walker's prospect pedigree, can exceed who he was as age 21 through 23 ball player. And he's certainly doing that this season. The previous Jordan Walker, that 11% homer to fly, I mean, that's pretty much league average. To see that almost double, like, yeah, that's a big jump, but also the raw power has jumped with it. Barrel rate's at 14% for Jordan Walker. And even before the season, Jordan Walker had above average power skills. It's just the results weren't there. So I've kind of always thought the power has been above average for Walker. And now we're starting to see that the results follow as he kicks the raw power skills into overdrive. The BABIP, I don't know. It's fewer ground balls, to your point. Jordan Walker's been like a 50% ground ball guy. More line drives this season, so that will always help your BABIP. I don't think he's a 300 hitter. I think he's more like a 250 hitter. But you pair a 250 hitter with this type of raw power and the fact that Jordan Walker has chipped in 10 bases already, this 10 stolen bases already this year, at 24 years old, like this looks like it's finally happening.
Yeah, I agree. I can see the batting average taking a dip, but the power, I think, is legit as legit can be. So it's one of those that you might lose one thing, but the power, I don't think, is disappearing anytime soon. Like maybe he goes to a 20% home run to fly ball, which still plays mighty well and gets hotter in the summertime, which won't hurt either. But it was an interesting conversation in the Discord talking about potentially the best fab pickup so far this year. And so maybe dig in on Jordan Walker, because Diversio, probably mispronounced that, but that's what I do on the show.
Very much so, but that's okay.
Yeah. But
actually that's kind of how I read it, but I know his full name.
Yeah, I don't. So Yeah, he mentioned Jordan Walker, and I'm like, I felt like he was more rostered late in draft season, but he wasn't, because it's like in OCs it was maybe 9 pickups week one, and then over the next 2 weeks like 140 leagues, like everyone jumped on board. So like by week 3 he was pretty much widely rostered. So it's very interesting to see that kind of a tick up with him, and he's helped a lot of teams out on the waiver wire. Alrighty, Otto Lopez, aka the bus driver. Last 3 years averaged .287 BABIP, .384 this year, which is correlated into a .336 batting average. Good for one of the top, if not the top, batting average in all baseball right now. He's got a home run to fly ball up to or down to 7% from 9%, which probably doesn't surprise me a ton, especially if you get the BABIP gains, which correlates with a ground ball rate over 53% right now, up from 48%. The batting average to me, Brian, like we talked about the bus driver a lot in the offseason. 336 might be a little much, but we saw 270 a couple years ago. I figured this was like a 280, 275, 280 guy with 15, 15. Like that's what we kept saying over and over again in the offseason. So, yeah, he's overshooting his skis a little bit potentially, but at the same time, I think he's a damn good hitter, and I don't think this is too crazy.
Exactly. You could have Otto Lopez fall back from a .336 batting average to a .280 type guy, and I agree with you on that one, and be just fine. Yeah, .280 batting average, 15-15 type guy like that, certainly from where Otto Lopez was being drafted, where the bus driver was leaving the parking lot from. That's you take that. And even stolen bases, like 15 bags is selling him short. He's already got 10 this season. It's nice to see an uptick in the attempt rate for the bus driver. So already at 10, he's 10 for 13. Like it's successful enough that the Marlins are, I think, going to keep letting Otto Lopez run. So yes, you can fall back a bit, but still be a pretty damn good player. So this is pretty sweet. I did not realize Otto Lopez led the entire major leagues in batting average. Actually got his 11th steal this evening. So yep. I think
more knocks, a couple more doubles.
Yeah. So it's nuts. Actually, the top three in batting average in the majors right now. Otto Lopez.
Jung-Hoo Lee.
Jung-Hoo Lee. The chant. That I could actually believe. Number three, Brandon Marsh. I had no idea. That's crazy to me.
I can't remember if it was our show last week or me with Ben. I like just had to confess about how good Brandon Marsh. I think it was our show talking about he's not a streamer. You just play him every day. He gets like cleanup for the Phillies, and the average, the power, and the speed. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's crazy. I have Brandon Marsh on a bunch of teams, and I did not realize he was this good.
Yeah, if you look at the batting average record, it makes the Giants' suckiness even worse because you have me and Arise in the top 7 or something like that.
Yeah, Arise is number 4.
Yeah, and it's just like we can't – because it's our bullpen, dude. Our bullpen's so effing bad. It's unbelievable. But, I won't get into that right now. It's just a whole other –
No, but I think Justin Mendez, I think he's managing the bullpen right. Like he threw win in there in the 9th last night. He should have done that. I think that was the right move to try and get Logan Webb the win.
We've moved on to Tuesday. Okay. It's okay. I know what you're trying to do here. It's not working. It's not working at all. But all right, let's talk about a guy that I think we're getting our answer we were looking for last year with Bryce Turang. We saw a guy with a .312 BABIP over 3 seasons. That's elevated tremendously from the 2025 season where Bryce Turang had a .356 BABIP, and we're all sitting there going, who is this guy? Well, this year he's got a .344 BABIP. His home run to fly ball, 8% to 20%. That's been the 8% is down from the first 2 seasons. The last season bolstered that as well. Basically, short way of saying it is we came into draft season going, is Bryce Turang this guy we saw last year? Is he worth the ADP? And through 65, 70 games, the answer is yes. This is who he is. Mm-hmm. Basically, this season's mimicking last season, and that's why the 3-year average hasn't caught up to it.
Agreed. And that's a really good point with really any kind of bloom board. And again, that's why we talk about these things. This is a very arbitrary line. You could split this up so many different ways. The way that I've shown it is this season versus the previous 3 years. If you split this up and show Bryce Turang this season and last season versus the previous 2 years, totally different guy. And you can make the argument, and you just did, I think correctly, that Bryce Turang is just matching what he did last year. And I mean, I said all draft season, this was the hardest guy for me to project. What version of Bryce Turang are we going to get in 2026? It turns out we're getting the best version. Like, yes, the batting average is there. The home run, he sustained the home run power. He's on pace to clear roughly around 30 bases. Like, everything good is happening with Bryce Turang right now, and I don't really see that changing.
No, he's a beast. They haven't hit in third. Like, it's nuts. You hear some of the Team USA players, like Logan Webb, I think Vinny P. I've heard Aaron Judge even. Like, they've all talked about it because the Brewers have played all these teams for some already. And they've all mentioned, like, people have asked me, so what was your thoughts playing with Bryce Turang? And they're all just like, he's better than we thought. Like, it's like they're all even saying it's the real deal. When you watch him, like, take batting practice, like, holy crap. Like, this little guy can go. So, yeah, yep. It's the real deal. Holy field. All right, Maximus Muncy of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Over the previous three seasons, .245 BABIP. This past year, .291, which is still horrible, but it plays. The increase is nice. That's got him up to a .258 batting average, which would be his best since 2018. He's also seen his home run to fly ball go from 19 to 25%. Power is never an issue when it comes to Maximus Muncy. It's, you always want him to stay healthy, which he's not doing again. You want him to be able to hit lefties, which he's kind of not doing either. But he's hitting for average really well versus righty, so he's taking advantage of that platoon split, which he was kind of scuffling at times in the past. So, yeah, do with this what you wish.
And he's just making better contact this year. Barrel rate's at 17%. That's a career high for Max Muncy. There's the, not even the narrative, there's the glasses. He can see clearly now. The glasses are on.
He can see clearly now. Oh, sorry.
Continue. Come on, the rest of the song
is gone.
Here we go. Bubba's, you got happy, Bubba, after I tried to tear him down multiple times so far.
Vegas, just
get him
baby.
To sing.
Vegas.
That's right.
All right, that's keep right. going. Sorry.
But no, I think so. The BABIP with Muncy has always been kind of really bad, but 291, that's still like somewhat below or right at league average. I think Max Muncy, given the harder contact, given that last year was even the last three last two seasons, 265, 264 BABIP, I think Max Muncy can hold a 240, mid 240s batting average with the power that he provides. Again, assuming he can stay healthy, now that he can see properly, is I don't know. I think this is one where you take the context of the vision, and you weigh the post glasses version of Max Muncy a little bit more, because that is a tangible change to his profile that something like a Bloom board isn't going to pick up.
Yep, I know it sounds pretty simple, but as one person that started wearing glasses a couple years ago, it helps a lot with what you're doing in life. So yeah, very tangible change. Yes,
I should, I don't know, look at that glasses.
I was like you, it was about age 39-40 when I was like 40. It was 40 when I started having to. It hit me hard when I was going to presentations and the PowerPoint. It was a little fuzzy in the.
I just, like, stare, I just stare at a computer all day. I did have computer glasses for a little bit, but probably time for a re-up.
Now, the eye doctor flat out said, what do you do a lot? I said, well, I'm not working. I'm on my computer, either podcasting or writing. And he goes, oh, so you stare at a screen most of the time you're not at work? I said, yeah. He's like, yeah, that's your problem. That'll do it. So, all right. Next up, CJ Abrams. This is interesting to me because it's 287 the last 3 years, BABIP-wise, 322 this year. How power those were, I'm excited. 11% over the previous 3 years, 18% home to fly ball this past year. June, he's slowed down a little bit, but it's eight games or whatever, so I'm not too worried there. Monster first 2 months of the season. It's got him hitting .289, 14 homers, 10 steals. Career highest 20 home runs in 2024. Think he's going to pass that, barring an injury. Yeah. What's your thoughts when you look at CJ Abrams? Because this is a guy, again, he's only 25. So there's a little trend here that guys can make changes as they grow up.
Exactly. This has been one of my favorite picks of the draft. I remember back in ADP season, I mean, you were on board with it too. I remember comparing Mookie Betts and CJ Abrams going right next to each other. Again, we talk all draft season about like how the fortunes of your team can change based on one decision. This would have been one of those. So CJ Abrams, agreed. I mean, he's fast too. I never really knew why CJ Abrams had such a low BABIP, at least in the early part of his career. It's ticked up every single season he's been in the majors. Strikeout rate is stable, better than average. Yeah, he's a little bit of a fly ball tilt, but you want that given the raw power. step forward that Abrams shown this season, and he keeps running with the Nationals. We've mentioned a couple times on this show, the Nationals are the best run scoring lineup in baseball. I believe that still holds true. So, yeah, like maybe CJ Abrams doesn't hit 290 all season, but can he hit 260 the rest of the way, which will then mean he hits like 275 on the year? That's a hell of a season for CJ Abrams, who, to your point, 25 years old, can make the argument he's just getting better.
Agreed on that one. I'm gonna start jumping around a little bit here before we get to the faller side of things. Like Randy Rosarena, I think we kind of know who he is. I'll just lay it out there. The 367 BABIP compared to 294, I think you and I both can be like, yeah, that's probably a bit much for the career we've seen with Randy.
Yeah, a bit much. And I actually didn't mention this at the beginning of the show. These guys are ordered by like the combination, like the combined change in BABIP and homer to fly. So like Randy Rosarena, for example, his homer to fly has actually gone down this season, and not as many barrels a season for Randy Rosarena. So this is really all BABIP driven for Randy. Been an excellent season, 18 steals for Randy Rosarena. So you like that, but no, not a 293 hitter. I think this is more a 250 type guy the rest of the way. And you just hope, the power ticks up a little bit for Randy, but the steals have been awesome. 43 runs scored is pretty damn sweet too.
Hit a big two-run homer in the 10th on Tuesday. So he's got going for him as well. Let's talk J.J. Bleday, though, because it's another one of those people are saying one of the best Fab pickups of the year. And it could be, as like Walker, Bowers, they're at least beginning of the seasons, have more runway with them. Bleday's been awesome. They're like $5 for a lot of people in like 15s. The previous 3 years, BABIP's 260. This year's 283. Biggest thing, that home run to fly ball, 11% over a three-year average, up to 20% this year. J.J. Bleday is he's hitting, as of tonight, 271 with 10 home runs and two steals in 165 plate appearances. That's a lot for J.J. Bleday, and his quality of contact's much better. Like, everything is up, Ryan. So do you believe in what we're seeing from J.J. Bleday is what I would say.
I believe a good bit of it for the Sailor. And only probably the five Sailor. People in the world know why we call him the Sailor, but I don't even know if you know why we call him the Sailor, Bubba, but I just started calling him that today. So
I do not, but I have a guess, but no, and I don't want to say it on the air because my guess is not appropriate. So yes.
Okay. I don't know. He's a little old to be like, he's turning over in a new leaf. Yeah, you know, I mean, I like mine older, but that's it's neither here nor there.
Phrasing.
Neither here nor there, but I don't know. On the one hand, like, yes, the power is supported by just a massive uptick in pretty much every, like, raw power skill for J.J. Bleday. And then you tack on the park. I know he was with the A's last season, at least part of last season. But that looks like it's taken a very nice step forward. Now that can fall back as well. And I think it probably will. 13% barrel. J.J. Bleday has never really held that in his career, though he did hold a 279 BABIP over a full season in 2024 with the A's. Only hit 243 that year. I don't know how the hell that happened, but, yeah, I think Bleday is like a 240 hitter with plus pop. And have we seen probably the best of J.J. Bleday this season? Probably. But that doesn't mean he can't be a productive guy, especially certainly in 15-teamers and still in 12s.
Yeah, no, I've always had a soft spot for Bleday, streaming him all the time. When he was playing regularly, he was a popular target for many last season. So, yeah, no problem with that. It's just been an extra spike this year. And as long as the quality of contact's there, I can believe a lot of it, especially played in that home ballpark. So I'll give him a nod on that one. I'm going to jump a few down to your boy, Michael Harris II. This is one of those, we talked about it in the offseason, like the second half, especially like the final month and a half, were awesome for Michael Harris II. It got his numbers once again into that. He got his first actual 2020 season, but kind of kept that same finishing line, hit 249, the lowest average he's had in a long time. But now we're seeing a guy that had a three-year BABIP of 304. It's up to 331, which is up, but not crazy, I guess. And then the home run to fly ball, 14% to 18%. He's hitting 306, 13 homers, three steals. That 306 average, he hit 293 and 297 in 2022 and 2023, Ryan. 2022 is not factored into this discussion right now. But what I'm trying to say is we've seen a guy with a similar profile before.
We have. It is a little weird to see Michael Harris kind of see this jump in BABIP while also hit a ton more fly balls. So part of me thinks that that part of this package isn't sustainable, but Michael Harris, I think, could still be 270, 280 type hitter as he's been for most of his career, or at least the first half of his career, I guess I should say. But highlight here is the raw power. It's crazy what Michael Harris has done. 27 barrels already this season. 15% barrel rate is elite. It's been like 10% for much of Michael Harris's career. So you like that. My biggest thing that I'm worried about, and maybe this is the Braves don't need to run him, but only three steals. Kind of want a little bit more. Maybe I'm getting greedy, but like once the batting average falls off a little bit, once the power, which again, he's deserved it so far, but that may be falling off a bit given Michael Harris's previous baselines there. I'd like to see more than three bags from him. I don't know if that turned around.
Yeah, the lack of speed is interesting. That is very, very true. But the hit tool is looking good once again for Michael Harris, and that Braves team's clicking, which is a beautiful thing as well. Going to jump down to Miguel Vargas. This has been a popular guy throughout this season. In the offseason, some of us were speculating on, we love the price tag of Miguel Vargas, and it was the old, like, hey, look it, he's 26. He's been battered and bruised in the Dodgers system. He's getting the new lease on life. We saw 234, 16-6 last year in his first hurrah. Now we're seeing a guy that over his first 3 years had a 234 BABIP, 243 this year, so a little uptick, nothing crazy. But the power, 7% home run to fly ball to 16% home run to fly ball. And that's got him 15 home runs with 9 steals already. Like, he's on pace for an amazing season. It's just like, is that jump sustainable is the question. And he's got, you know, the quality of contact boost that we've seen with like the CJ Abrams of the world and whatnot, while the balls in play are kind of looking the same, Ryan. So what's your thoughts on Miguel Vargas? Because he's a guy that, not going to be for an elite average, but he's on pace to like literally go 25 to 30 homers and like 20 steals right now.
Yeah. And again, this is another, I think the theme of this show is like players who we think are older than they actually are. Like Go Vargas has been around. Exactly. And starting to figure it out at a time where they're still like pre-peak in terms of their career. So Miguel Vargas, it's a 50% fly ball rate. That's a ton of fly balls. It works with the power given, especially this season, given how much harder Miguel Vargas is hitting the ball, but it also kind of cements, like, it's hard to have a good batting average and hit the ball in the air half the time. Like, it's just not going to happen. A 240 batting average for Miguel Vargas, I think, is probably the expectation, even though he still has a decent K rate. So I don't think there's like a low floor for the batting average. I don't know if it dips much lower than that. To me, it looks like the power here is legit, upwards of 30 bombs for someone in his age 26 season who was kind of jerked around by the Dodgers. And really, this is Miguel Vargas's, like, really, it's just his second full season in the majors. So give this guy time to figure it out. And at least on the power front, he's doing that. The 9 bags also helps quite a bit. Only stole 6 in 2025. So that's another kind of unforeseen boost that we've gotten from Miguel Vargas so far this year.
It helps that he's on a team that's actually winning games and fun to watch, fun to play with, probably.
I know, like, dude, the White Sox, it's the second time we're giving flowers tonight, but dude, and they're just fun as hell to watch.
Like it's a shame, because Murakami, there are stories when you'd watch some of their games. He'd say, yeah, he took him out to a sushi restaurant in this town, and they were in the dugout, and him and Montgomery at the restaurant figured out a new handshake, and they were doing handshakes for home run salutes. And it's just like, there's just a lot going on that's in that awesome team, where you can see they're really kind of getting it all together. And with that youth, like, this could, if they could find a pitching staff, like, that's it in that division, the White Sox could have a run. Looking at you, Mike Carter, looking at you,
half a game all behind, right, Cleveland, that's it. So
yeah. So like I said, I go trade for a pitcher. I know they got a ton of youth depth, go. And the Kyle Teal's not even back yet. So all right, let's go to the fallers side of things, Ryan, here, and we're just gonna start right at the top with one of your olds, Manny Machado. This is a guy that, you know, I'm with you on, that was literally the model of consistency. You just looked at every single season. It's like 25 to 35 home runs. He's going to get you 10 plus steals. He's going to hit you 260 to 275, usually 275 plus. Like, you just knew what you're writing it in. It was year after year and until it wasn't. His age 33 season so far, it has been a doom and gloom. We've seen his BABIP over three seasons at 293 down to 167. But his home run to fly ball is still 15%. That has not changed, which I guess could be a silver lining in this situation for Manny Machado, because a lot of other things have dwindled. The quality of contact is down, Ryan. What are you thinking when you're looking at Manny Machado? He did get two hits tonight. One was a double, so maybe that's a sign of things to come. But it's been a downward turn for Mr. Machado.
It has been. I think both can be true. Like, I think Manny Machado is much better than this. But he's also in decline. Like, I will admit that this old is olding. Just to give listeners some context on a 167 BABIP, like, that is horrendously low. That is the lowest in baseball among qualified hitters. It is the lowest in baseball among qualified hitters by 40 points. So Evan Carter is number two. And as the second lowest BABIP at 202, and Manny Machado's at 167. Okay, technically that's 37 points. The soft spot, Cedric Mullins, is third lowest at 205. But again, that, so like, it's the old money ball, like, you know, there's us, there's 50 feet of crap, and then there's us. That's how low Manny Machado's BABIP has been. This, like, that is horrendously bad, and it cannot stay anywhere near this low for much longer. So I am back in on the Manny Machado train. Like, is he gonna go back to like the 2025 pace, the 2024 pace from here on out? No, but I don't think he's that far off, and I think he's a much better batting average guy than what we've seen this season. I mean, the K rate's still right at league average. It's only a few points back from what we saw the last couple of years. So I don't know. I'll probably keep sinking with this ship, but it's my second ship reference tonight. But I don't know. I this can't stay this bad for this long.
No, it can't. And I agree. Like, I like to throw my jabs, but that's kind of what we do back and forth around here, just for, to keep things honest. We don't agree on everything. And I was with you on Machado is the problem. Like, that's the bummer in this whole deal. Yeah. And like, we talk about it a lot in the preseason. Like, eventually Father Time wins. It's just, when does Father Time win? Like, we're not going to talk about Marcell Ozuna, but I'm pretty sure that's a Father Time thing, or maybe he's on steroids. Who knows? Both. But like, Machado, and it might not be over yet. Like I agree. I don't think a 167 BABIP's even close to possible. Like, I think we see him get at least by to 250 to 260 by season's end. Just, he has such a high hill to climb, but like, he might not get to 293. Yeah. I agree with you that it should get a lot better. The only thing that I always get concerned with Machado, and we never know, he's always playing.
Is hurt. He hurt? Yeah.
He's always playing hurt because he doesn't miss games. That's the other consistent. It's 159, 152. He had the 130, but then 150, 150. It's always 150 plus every single season.
And to your point, this season he had like a calf strain or something. I remember watching the game, missed like one or two games, and then was back in. Like, is that lingering? Yeah, that's been his whole career.
That's my only concern. And when you get older, Ryan, as you know now, it's harder to recover from things than it used to be. And he's got world-class technology we don't have, but you understand my point.
Dude, I was sore from the Nerf battle on Monday, 2 days later.
At least he didn't have to tie any balloons beforehand, so that's good. But let's move on. Like, I agree. I think Machado goes up, but to what is the question? And let's hope he's not actually hurt. Do we need to talk Law Dog? Like, I don't think we do. He's pretty much gone.
Right? No, I don't. I mean, this is one where you factor on the lack of playing time, of course, now, but then the preseason knee stuff, like, you, similar to Machado, is he playing hurt? I think that has to factor in here too.
Agreed. The one I do want to talk about here is Dansby Swanson, because I got some pushback on the fact that I was dropping Dansby Swanson, and he was going to Coors this week, and he went 1-for-4 with a double and a run scored on the first game in Coors. So again, not doing much to satisfy my fantasy needs. Dansby Swanson's another one of those consistent guys, Ryan, that we like for what he does. It's a 15-15, 20-20 type profile. It was a 298 BABIP over the last three seasons, down to 207 this year. 14% home run to fly ball, down to 11% this year. He's walking more this year, which is kind of odd for him. Yeah, he's hitting a 180, which is horrific, and that correlates with the BABIP. But it's also a guy like we're seeing the quality of contact take a pretty good dip, Ryan. And we're seeing a guy that's just hitting the ball in the air a lot. And it's not panning out is the best way I would say it. So people thought I was crazy for Swanson. I know you want to keep Swanson. We talked about it on Thursday night show. When you look at a chart like this, what are your thoughts on Dansby Swanson?
I don't think it changes that much for me. Like I just think Dansby Swanson is pretty stable. Obviously he's been stably bad. He's been consistently bad this season, but I don't know, man, it's a 100-point drop in BABIP from basically every other season that Dansby Swanson has had. I understand the drop, especially like
the drop was in 12s.
Exactly. I understand that. I get it. Especially if you have decent replacement options available to you. I certainly understand playing the hot hand and just rolling with it. I think Dansby Swanson is going to be fine. Again, the damage has been done at this point. It has been pretty brutal, but even for as brutal as it's been, to still have 7 homers and 5 bags, it's not a total nothing. But I don't know. I think Dansby Swanson's 230 to 240 type hitter. K rate stable. Like, yes, the quality of contact to your point is down a little bit, but does not deserve to be 100 points lower in BABIP than he's been every other season in his career.
I guess I'll ask this thing, because Machado, you're starting because third base sucks. Are you starting Swanson? Or are you at least sitting Swanson?
Well, Bubba, let me check my teams.
That means a yes. He's starting Swanson is where that one's going. Because that's my next question. Okay, you don't have to drop everybody. I get that. But are you at least trying to not start him?
I have him in 2 leagues, at least on the NFBC, 15 teamers. One's a draft and hold. So
that's what it is.
It is what it is. I'm starting him in both in Olak and the Meatball. I'm starting him at middle infielder, my 15 over Oswald Peraza. I don't know. Probably should be playing Peraza.
I'd be playing Peraza, yes. That'd be my 2 cents on that one. But we'll see what you do this weekend. JTR, any worth discussion here? Do you think it's all injury-based? He's getting older. We know that for a fact. But the drop-off has been rather steep this season. I want to credit a lot of it to injury, but it also could be age.
Those two kind of go together too, right? I mean, JTR, like everyone we've talked about so far is like 32, 33. I think Machado's age 33.
It's the opposite of the riser side.
Exactly. Yes. And maybe this is that might be
the olds.
Bigger takeaway. The olds are letting me down this year. They treated me well last year, but who, 35-year-old catcher for JTR. Not only like a 35-year-old catcher, like this dude has been like an Iron Man. And you just wonder, like, when you see pretty much everything drop like this, other than the strikeout rate, like the K rate looks pretty like, but that just means he's putting bat on ball. It is with zero authority. The dude has 5 barrels all season in 161 plate appearances. Like that is really bad. And obviously not running. He's got 2 bags. So I think JTR is in some trouble.
Yeah, and he's one of those guys that, you know, I get a lot of questions with catcher stuff, and people go, would you rather JTR catcher 2 over so-and-so? And I still trust him as a catcher 2 over a lot of these kind of catcher of the day options that we keep discussing each and every week, just because if he's healthy, which is the big if right now, he's still playing every day. We know the production is down, but as a catcher 2, you can live with that in 15s. So it's a case-by-case basis. Like, he's probably going to start for a lot of teams right now. Just realize life is not great in that regard.
Yeah. And, like, not likely to get better. Like, you can't just – unless you go on the IL, if you're a catcher, it's like you got to sit back there and squat every day.
Like, you already expect the decline as the season goes on for catchers. Like, his is already dropped off, and then it's not coming back up before it declines is the problem.
You can't DH him, like –
No, tough. That's the Schwarbombs is in the way for that one. And that's rightfully so. All right, let's stick in the 30s. 31-year-old Brent Rooker. This is another one where it has been really weird. Then he had a knee injury, but he didn't miss time. Hit a couple home runs in Wrigley. Then when the team scored 29 runs on Monday, does nothing, which was a tough one to swallow if you had Brent Rooker. Brent Rooker over 3 years at a 325 BABIP, 243 BABIP this year. Power 20% to 17%. So the power is still there, 10 home runs. You'd expect more, but it doesn't help when he's hitting 200. Like, you expect more balls in play. Strikeout rate has jumped a ton this year, back to the 2022, 2023, 2020, like all those rough seasons for Brent Rooker in Minnesota. But the quality of contact still extremely good. The power, like I said, still very much alive. I think he's fine. Maybe it is the knee injury more than anything with Brent Rooker. But what are your thoughts when you look at this profile from Brent Rooker?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me is the strikeouts. Like, that is a concern. To go from 22% last year back up to 32% this year is rough. But Brent Rooker, I mean, it's kind of always been a high strikeout guy. Like, 2025 is probably the outlier there. So, yeah, nice to see the quality of contact's fine. It's going to – I hear it's warm in Sacramento in the in the summertime. Our guy –
not a pitcher's park.
Our guy TDK, he's here. He's boots on the ground in Sacramento. He can attest to that. He's also in the chat here saying it's going to heat up in Chicago soon. So that's probably a Dansby Swanson comment in the chat there. But yeah, I think Rooker, like, you may have to eat a 240 something batting average, but I still think he's going to get you 30 home runs by the end of the season. TDK says it's hot. No,
it is hot right now, and it's only going to get worse. Like, even where I'm at, it's going to be 100. And if it's 100 where I'm at, TDK is he's approaching like 105 plus. That's where I grew up, real close to where TDK is at. So I lived that life for 24 years or so.
It looks it, Bubba. I'm kidding.
No, what I look like, Ryan, is a lot of other things we don't need to talk about on this show, but life is the best way to put it. Yes, life happened. Is the way I'll put this one.
Damn. Jesus.
Hey, I got a face for radio. I'm not going to talk about Logan O'Hoppe. He's broken. He's hurt. He's a mental midget right now. Like, he's so in his head. The quotes from the last couple nights, he's pushing too hard. And I dropped him a couple weeks ago in the 12. I could, first, if you need to, I could see that being an option. I don't know if you have anything on O'Hoppe.
No, it's been a slog for a while. And yeah, I read those quotes the other night as well. And it's, you could say he's pressing.
Yeah, when you're in your head like that, it's not going to help anything at all. Aaron Judge, don't need to talk about that. But Matt McClain, we're going to talk about the last three guys here. Matt McClain is one that it's interesting because if you really look at the grand scheme of things, we got a guy that had a 330 BABIP over the last three seasons, but that was heavily factored in from 2023. And let's not forget, it's a two-season deal because he didn't play in 2024. Down to 252 this year, and we've seen a home run for fly ball go from 13% to 11% right now. Monster spring. Massively disappointing to the point if Ellie Ramirez's hamstring doesn't fall off, McClain's probably in AAA right now. So where are you at? Like, he's getting a second lease on life for the moment. He needs to take advantage of it is what it comes down to.
And it could just be for the moment once Ellie comes back, depending on how good
Edwin Arroyo's doing nothing, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's only been, I don't know, he's been up like a week, so we'll see. But that's, and always when the playing time, I forget what quote I made up one time, when the playing time starts to wane, I don't know.
Yeah, Continue. I'm curious where this is going.
Got it. I don't know. Back to McClain. The problem is, like, it's just such a heavy fly ball tilt without the hard contact. And that's just always an issue. Like the raw power for McClain is league average. But when you have league average power and you hit a 48% fly ball rate, even in Great American Small Park, like, it's just hard to have a good batting average.
Eldridge Dong, let's go. Straight away center field. Sorry.
That's your guy, man.
Yes, I've waved that flag and been told I'm dumb many times, so go, baby.
He's a batting average risk, Bubba.
Yeah, he's swing and miss is crazy. Swing and miss is so bad right now. Yeah, swing and miss at that. Where are you at on that one? Sorry.
I don't know. Forgot.
Matt McClain, batting average risk.
Yeah, he is a batting average.
When the playing time wanes, Eldridge goes Dwayne. I don't know. Sorry, I ruined your whole momentum. No,
totally derailed. I don't even know if I was making a good point, but you derailed whatever I was doing, which is fine. I'm glad to see you celebrate Oh, I just saw the replay. Good God. Crushed that.
Straight away center field destroyed.
Yeah. All right. Finish Matt McClain. Yeah. Yes. Where I was going with that is just the combination of so many fly balls without good quality of contact. You tack onto that, like, historically pretty bad K rate for Matt McClain. It's just going to be tough for him to have a good batting average or even sniff 290, which was that rookie season for Matt McClain. He's honestly just looked like a different hitter since he missed the 2024 season.
Yep. Full agree. There was hope that after a year he'd start to get it back. Then the spring got everybody hyped, and it just, and maybe he still will. Cause the thing is, out of all the guys we talked about, he's still young. We've talked about olds. He's still young. So there's a window where maybe things get going, but it seems like the Reds have a lot of infield options in their youth. So that is going to be an issue for McClain. All right. Speaking of olds, 36-year-old George Springer, 36 years old.
And real quick,
Yes.
Sorry to cut you off, but Kevin Hastings in the chat tonight, but he put it in the Discord. He put some numbers behind this olds exercise. The list of these fallers, average age of 31, and only four of them out of the 15 are under 29 years old, which is crazy. Yep.
Checks out for sure. George Springer, by the way, last year coming off a career season, 309, 32 home runs and 18 steals, things we never thought we'd see for a 35-year-old. Definitely didn't expect from a 36-year-old. He's seen his BABIP drop to 231 this year after a 290 average, down to 8% in the home run to fly ball compared to 15%. Don't forget he missed time on the IL with a fractured toe, kind of re-aggravated it. He's played through it since then. Ben and I talked about him on Monday because he's one of the worst Razzball player rater earners this year, negative value, and still rostered in like over 80% of leagues and OCs. So, what's your thoughts on George Springer, Ryan? Because mine don't matter. This is one of your olds.
Yeah, he brought me to the promised land last year and then brought me to whatever the opposite of the promised land is.
He brought you to penthouse, back to the outhouse.
Yeah, there we go. That's a better way to put it there. It's just a funny game, man. Like, isn't this, this is why we torture ourselves playing fantasy and trying to project humans, because this looks like a totally different human than the version we saw last year. Nobody was expecting the version of George Springer from last year to carry forward to this year. I mean, he was a top 15 overall player in 2025 and was being drafted, I want to say, like around 100. So like the regression was here. I am trying to talk myself into George Springer again, or at least legitimize my thinking here. But I don't know, man. I did not see this collapse coming. And with Springer, obviously age is always a risk of something like this falling off a cliff. But I don't know, man. I do think something isn't right with the lower body. I do think that is it's been toe, it's been foot, it's been just a bunch of stuff for Springer this year. I'm not trying to make excuses for the guy, but it's been brutal. And at 36, like, what are the odds he bounces back to full health this season and just turns this around? Could happen, but seems unlikely.
And the weird thing is, it's like the Jays, I know they're going to play Springer. I'm not clueless to that scenario, but like when you look at their roster, they keep leading off Springer. Maybe put him down in the order for starters would be something to consider. He's DHing. I know Vladdy DH'd and gave Springer the day off on Tuesday. So that's something they could try to do. But they have a lot of young play. Like we talk about Pinongo. We talk about Jesus Sanchez. There's a bunch of young talent that they need to get. Like even Charles McAdoo, he might not be great, but it seems like when he plays, he's quasi-productive. So there needs to be a window where Springer maybe takes a little time off to heal would be a smart thing to do. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Springer BABIP the last four seasons, 231 this year, 340 last year, 245 the year before, and then 291 the year before. It's been all over the place.
Roller coaster of emotions right there, folks. All right, last but not least, talking about roller coasters of emotions, people that are rostering Bo Bichette, well, you got him for a batting average. You're not getting him. He's hitting 234, five homers, and one stolen base on the season, a 267 BABIP after 332 the last 3 years. he's perennially been like a 340 and above BABIP guy year after year in his entire career. Home run to fly ball, 12% to 7%. Home runs power-wise have always been a question with Bo Bichette. I don't know. I stayed far, far away from Bo Bichette. Other people did not. Ryan, I don't think you were on Bo Bichette. I won't speak for you. But I honestly don't see a whole lot to get excited about right now.
I mean, I'll flip this. I'll frame it a different way. There isn't much change in skill between Bo Bichette this season and last season. It's the same. It's very, very, very similar batted ball profile, ground ball, fly ball. It's basically the same barrel rate. It's, I don't want to say the same strikeout rate, but it's 3 points higher. It went from 14.5. Now it's at 17. Like, this isn't that different of a guy from 2025. And yes, you can argue 2025, Bo Bichette was over his skis with those skills. Yeah. But I don't think he's anywhere near this bad either.
It's also not that far off of 2024 where he was this bad.
There was no power in 2024.
The barrel rate was down, but the hard hit rate was the same. Five ball rates were the same. Like all the contact metrics outside of barrel were like the barrel rate was down 3%, which to like 5%, 4.5 compared to 7.5, which is still not great. But everything else, hard hit was the same. So, I don't know. I think I was far, far away from this one. Maybe he turns it around. I wouldn't hold my breath on Bo Bichette.
I think he's
28, by the way. He's one of the youths.
He's one of the youths. There we go. And he's the worst. Machado is the worst. This is ordered the other way. But I don't know. He'll be better, but it's hard when Bo Bichette doesn't. The stolen base ship has sailed, to use that term again. And then you don't have any steals. And even last year, he had 18 home runs like over a full season. Like, I don't know. Power hasn't been there for a while. So it'll get better. But Bo Bichette's still, I don't know, fringy in 15s.
Yeah, we'll see. Like March, April, he hit 230 with two homers. May at 207 with three homers. June, he hasn't homered in the first six games, but he's hitting 375 at least. So that's again, super, super small sample, but you're seeing a little improvement over that stretch. So maybe he figures it out a little bit more, but I'm not getting overly excited with Bo Bichette.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right. Final thoughts on the Bloom board. Kevin mentioned Bichette stopped pulling the ball, especially in the air 2 seasons ago. I've been out since. Yeah, it's been a rough go. And, That team was a mess early on. It's starting to get a little bit of its legs underneath it with Benji and stuff. But, yeah. Any final thoughts on the Bloom board before we get to the wonderful listener questions we have?
No, I mean, I'll echo Kevin's. I guess that was one of the listener questions, so it could be a segue. But, Kevin's follow-up to the kind of the age analysis that he gave, is this a coincidence that the olds are declining and the youths are rising? To this extent, probably not. I think that's a little fluky, but... but yes, I mean, there is an aging curve that happens, especially speed, batting average, and hard hit, like that stuff falls off. So it is something I need to, again, the olds treated me well last year. So much this year. So yeah, but you have to balance it between, again, this is more of an off season type deal. You don't want to overreact too much to one season and just totally go the other way. So we'll see.
This is true. All right, one question from the YouTube chat before we go to the Discord. JD Bowles says, JTR or Susak? I still lean JTR in that scenario.
I would too. But hey, why is Bowles asking us the question? He's, I think, top 10 in the listener leagues.
He's doing overall. Quite well for himself. Doing quite well.
Yeah, I would do JTR as well over Susak.
All right, our buddy SMMS79 says, first, fade one from the left side, the green side, the riser side of things.
All right, if I'm fading one on the risers, I will fade. I won't say Nick Gonzalez. We skipped him for a reason. Yeah, I'll say, of the guys we talked about, I'll say JJ Bleday.
That's fair. I'm going to Max Muncy. Max Muncy's out for me.
Wow, even after the song.
Yeah, hey. It's all good. Okay. It happens to the best of them. He's a Dodger. One by from the right side who is not Aaron Judge.
Manny Machado.
Yeah, it seems like the easiest one. And I'm with you on that. That wasn't a slight on you. I'll buy Brent Rooker. I think Brent Rooker will be
okay,
just fine in the summertime in Sacramento. Ben Bingham says, let's say you're looking for batting average on the wire. Do you look at average primarily, or is there a more predictive stat you prefer?
For batting average on the wire, for me, it's just K rate and your ground ball, line drive, fly ball. That needs to look, you can't have too many fly balls. Not going to have a good batting average. It's strikeout rate. How often are you putting the ball in play? How often are you playing to make that batting average count? Park factor can weigh in as well, but kind of all those factors, K rate, batted ball, and hard hit, which I know doesn't really answer Ben's thing, but I do not look one. I mean, to also answer, I do not look at previous batting average. I don't think that's a good predictor of future batting average, especially on FAB when it's tiny samples.
Yeah, I don't think it's good in that regard. What I like to look at, though, is if it is tiny samples in theory, but I will play the hot hand is where I'm going with this, and it plays into the matchups and all the stuff you're mentioning. But like Ben talks about it a lot, and I think we've talked about it a bit. He uses three-week profiles. He has a whole sheet every 3 weeks, sets of stats. And I'll look at like two-week, four-week samples and try to get an idea there and roll with it. And in those samples, you'll see playing time, as Ryan said, and you'll see other factors. But yeah, play the matchups, see who's hot, roll with it, ditch, move on. Batting average is just tough to find. You're not going to find a guy that's going to consistently, if he's on the wire, to find a guy that consistently hits for average the rest of the year is very difficult. So
yeah, the key to that whole spiel you just said, and I agree, Bubba, is the timing of the ditch.
Yes.
is easier said than done.
And I've been much more aggressive on my ditches for that reason. Like, I'd rather be a week early than a week late on them. And we'll see where it goes. Martin Sikulski says, are we really buying Otto Lopez as a top five shortstop? That's where he's at on the Razzball Player Rater.
I don't know if there's enough power speed juice there to be a top five shortstop. I mean, you got to be pretty damn good. So, yeah, he could flirt top 10. And I think that's plus EV. As some people say.
Yes, as some people would say. Just, I'm not on a player rater right now. I'm just on Fangraphs. I guess I go to the Fangraphs player rater. I think about it. I just want to see something real quick for S's and G's. Who is on this shortstop player rater to give us a discussion here. He did Razzball. I'm on Fangraphs page. So it works with like Abrams, Ellie, Bobby Witt. On Fangraphs, he's fourth. So it goes Abrams, Cruz, Bobby Witt, Otto, Zach Neto, Xavier Edwards' teammate, six. McGonagall, Rocchio, Colson Montgomery, Ernie Clement is 10th. There you go, Ryan. Gunner's 11th, Trey's 12th. If you really think about it, though.
That's crazy.
Yeah, they deserve to be there. It's the crazy part. That's where I was going with that. I just wanted to see with my own eyes.
That's a weak top 10 this year.
Yeah, shortstop is not produced to what we'd expect is what I would go with there. Mailman Mike says, can JJ Bleda keep this up? You think for the most part, right?
He was my fade on the green side.
Okay, so. Never mind. He does not think so. Sorry. I thought during the discussion, though, you're like, yeah, he's still pretty good. The average goes down, but the power might be good. Is Stowers last year a fair comp to JJ Bleda?
That's a fair comp. I mean, if the question is who'd I rather the rest of the way, I'd do Stowers, but it's a fair comp kind of like Stowers. Like Bleda has had more failure in the majors, a longer track record of not being good than Stowers. So
like Colton Cowser might be a JJ Bleda comp. Just because we saw it a few years ago, we haven't seen it since.
Yep. Where is Otto on the second base player rate? If you still have that up, because as TDK mentions, he's dual eligible. I'm curious. The second base for a shortstop
position. He is second behind Bryce Turang.
Okay.
Here's second base for you. Bryce Turang, Otto Lopez, Casey Schmidt is third.
Oh!
Brandon Lau, Xavier Edwards is fifth. The Marlins represent Albies, Rocchio again, Luis Arraez, Ketel Marte is ninth, Ernie Clement 10th yet again. It's beautiful.
But that, absolutely, so that's interesting. Ernie Clement is the number 10 second baseman and number 10 shortstop.
Now let's see where Ernie's at on third base, because he's multi-position. Now we've derailed, but this is what we do on Tuesdays more than anything. Clement is eighth at third base. Miguel Vargas, okay, number one.
Okay. Wow.
Vargas, J-Ram, Casey Schmidt's third there as well.
How is, well, all right, fair enough. Look forward, yeah, to our, so this, we do a all-star break. We do a mid-season, yeah, player rater versus ADP. That's going to be pretty fascinating for every position.
Yeah, just for those three positions, the top 5 to 10 are a lot of standouts. So,
yeah,
very interesting stuff. A few more here if I can navigate the minefield. Good God.
I'm part of the minefield this week.
Yeah.
This is where the sailor nickname.
Question. That's the last question, actually. That's just you guys talking from then on out. Kevin's got
Canton.
No. Number one thing I've heard at FPAS was my first 2019 when Dave Potts said I'm the only person that's won two $1 million contests because I play the old boring guys, the rest of you won't. It's true, but that's DFS as well. He's discussing. But Canton's has a big board that the listeners can't say. But I guess, do you think line drive percentage comparison is better indicator of changes in BABIP?
So, yes. If you have an uptick in line drive rate, line drives, I think, these may not be the exact numbers, but this is off the top of my head. Ground balls have a general BABIP, I think, around 300. Fly balls is, I think, in the low 20s. Line drives is like 60, 70. I mean, right? Like, line drives are going to be hits. That's even more meaningful than hard hit. Is hitting line drives now. So yes, you can kind of backwards looking, someone who has an uptick in line drive rate is going to most likely have a better BABIP. Doesn't mean it's the case going forward. Like, line drive rate is still super pretty, it's still super noisy. And just because you have a uptick in line drive rate through the first two and a half months of the season, doesn't necessarily that's going to hold the rest of the way either. So yes, they're very tightly correlated, but I don't know how predictive it is.
Fair enough. That's why he's the statistical expert on the show, folks, because I just think line drives are so not sticky. So that's what I always think of.
Yeah,
they're good, they're bad. If they're hitting them well, then that's what you want to see. But
right,
very tough to track compared to guys' consistency in ground balls and fly balls. All right, that will wrap us up on tonight's show, Ryan. And final thoughts is another Bloom Board episode. That's a good one. Fun banter. Some interesting players discussed. Great chat. Final thoughts before we come back with our week 13 fab preview, which we already got a couple prospects to talk about. And honestly, there was a lot of cheap guys that did not get added this last week that might be on the docket this week.
Yeah, it could be some fireworks on the Thursday show. Make up for last week. And as you and Ben were saying on the Monday pod, it was like there may only be another, you know, kind of big week of spending before things start to really go down the second half of the year. And this week could be that week.
It could be. So you guys tune in Thursday evening or listen later on your favorite listening platform for your fab preview, where we'll get you covered when the A's go back to Sacramento for a week out of Las Vegas. Remember, that's coming up next week, and much, much more. But until then, follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm BD Intrick. This was Bubba the Bloom, episode 354. Catch y'all next time.